Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In the early afternoon of Friday, May 16th, DeMarco K. Davidson, the executive director of Metropolitan Congregations United, walked into Centennial Christian Church for a meeting with longtime church member Cheryl Jackson. They were talking about the church's future. The pastor of the church in the Fountain Park neighborhood in North St. Louis had recently resigned. When that meeting started, around 1:30, it was still sunny outside. The forecast had called for a chance of severe weather, but what would unfold nearly an hour and a half after the meeting started, no one imagined. About a half hour later, the sunshine went away, the lights flickered, and the sound of hail pummeling the stained glass windows echoed throughout the chapel. DeMarco and Cheryl abruptly ended their meeting and were planning to seek shelter downstairs to wait out the storm. But the lights went off, and then there was a crash that sounded like a chandelier shattering on the ground. Here's DeMarco.
I was trying to encourage Sister Cheryl to, like, we gotta move now.
An EF3 tornado had touched down in St. Louis, and Centennial Christian Church was in its path. Then DeMarco's ears popped.
I did not know that was part of being experiencing a tornado. Because of the atmospheric pressure, your ears pop when you are near a tornado. Did not know that. Or experiencing a tornado. Did not know that. That also gave me a high alert of, oh no, what's about to happen? But then the walls and the doors, everything started shaking violently. I think that was the moment where I realize a tornado is here, and we're about to get hit by a tornado.
Everything happened quickly. The walls and doors started to shake violently. DeMarco had a gut feeling a tornado was about to hit Centennial.
That was one of the scariest moments, because it's not like you can just jump away from a tornado, just duck and hide from a tornado, especially a tornado that is hitting a building. We never saw it coming. We didn't hear a siren.
DeMarco and Cheryl had made it to the door, but when he opened it, he saw Patricia Pendleton. They didn't know she was still inside the building. She'd been at the church earlier that day, meeting with people experiencing homelessness in the Fountain Park neighborhood. From where Davidson was standing, it looked like Pendleton was trying to close the front door. And as DeMarco held on to Cheryl Jackson, trying to keep her covered, he yelled out to Patricia Pendleton.
My last words, like, Miss Peck, get away from the... And that was it. Then it was like a boom.
Ms. Pat, Patricia Pendleton, died, as did four others across the city that day. More than 10,000 buildings and homes were significantly damaged or decimated, and countless people were displaced. The 121-year-old church was destroyed, and DeMarco and Cheryl were trapped inside and buried beneath the rubble. Now here to tell us more about what happened to the church and to the people who were inside is St. Louis Public Radio afternoon newscaster Mersanne Lewis-Thompson. Mersanne, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Mersanne, what did DeMarco tell you about what was going through his mind at that point of being unable to move or to get out?
I think he was like, it's scary, right? Like everything around them was incredibly unstable. And, you know, they call out, he and Cheryl Jackson, they call out to Miss Pat, and as they called her, and they were like, hello, are you out there? They're looking around the room. They don't see her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you have to understand, like, they had dropped down to where the library was in the church. So, like, they were no longer on the main level. So they couldn't see anything above that at that point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he in his mind, he was like, okay, I got to stay calm and I got to make sure that Miss Cheryl is going to be okay, because, you know, she's an older woman. She's 78. He was trying to prop her up. There's all this debris, wood with nails in it, glass every which way. And he was just like, okay, main priority is we got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And so he still has his phone, which took me by surprise.
Right. Before we get to that,
yeah,
what about Cheryl Jackson, does she talk with you about what she was thinking? I mean, she is a really longtime member of that church, and I'd imagine she's been through a lot of things in her life. What does she tell you about that moment?
I think overall for her, it was, wow, here I am. I am 78 years old. I have survived cancer. I am a cancer survivor of 30 years, right? And here I am in my childhood church since I was nine. Mm-hmm. And now I am literally in it. You know, that is a traumatic experience. And she described it as such, like, this is just trauma. Mm-hmm. And she was hoping and praying that she would get out. And, you know, that day, having DeMarco there, that was the first time from, you know, what I've been told that they even met. Mm-hmm. So imagine your first encounter being something like that.
Right, right. A once in a lifetime, you hope, experience. Mm-hmm. So to the point about the phone, so DeMarco was not just waiting for help. His cell phone, by some miracle, did have service. So he did what I believe most anyone would do, which is to call 911, but no person answered.
I literally asked myself, maybe I hit my head harder than I think. Maybe there's debris in my eye. Maybe the screen is dirty. Maybe I dialed a different number. Let me hang up and call again.
So hearing that, DeMarco obviously then needs to move to something else. Who did he call next, and what happened there?
Well, before we even get into that, what he called was 911. What he heard was a non-emergency line. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's what you're hearing his response to is like, are you kidding me? Like, I called 911 twice and you didn't pick up. So he starts to call his sister. He calls his mom. He calls his fraternity brother, who is a St. Louis Metropolitan Police officer. He calls his actual brother, who's a St. Charles, I believe, county or city. I can't remember, but he was also a police officer there. Mm-hmm. And he's making all these calls, right? And he's like, y'all, look, I am in this church with two other people. 911 is not answering. Can y'all call on my behalf? Maybe y'all will have some luck. They start calling. They have the other people call, you know, in addition to them. And then he calls Reverend Deetra Wise Baker. And at that point, you know, she is unaware that this storm has transpired, right? Mm-hmm. She was in the middle of Whole Foods. She was shopping for a graduation celebration for Eden Theological Seminary that night to be with her colleagues. Mm-hmm. And she gets this call from him and he's like, listen, the floor has caved in. The roof has collapsed on top of us. We are stuck in the church. Mm-hmm. And she is like,
incredulous.
She could not even believe it.
Right,
stunned,
right.
Stunned, right? And she was like, he was like, listen, I called 911 and they're not answering. And she was like, they didn't answer? And he was like, yeah, they did not answer. Like, I called 911 and I got the non-emergency line instead of regular 911. And she was like, okay, let me, you know, call and see what I get.
Right.
And well, what she got wasn't any better.
Mm-hmm. So she calls and she gets this.
And he's like, I got to transfer you to the city. That's what he says. I got to transfer you to the city. I'm like, okay, fine, as long as they pick up. But they don't pick up.
And this was a call that she made to the county, right?
Mm-hmm, because she was in the county at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's like, okay, listen. They didn't answer. Can y'all help? And they're like, we got to transfer you. We just got to transfer you, which I found like, hello, this is a tornado.
Yeah.
Like, can't you make an exception? Like, someone's trapped in a building.
And what did you hear from those who are with emergency services? I mean, there were a lot of calls coming in at that time. What was their response to you about what both Reverend Deetra Wise Baker heard and what DeMarco Davison also was getting?
What I found surprising was that they only got six calls about the church collapsing that day, which I found odd. It seemed incredibly low. Then they told me that they had only gotten 336 calls between 2:30 and 6:30 p.m. of that day regarding the tornado, which also seemed incredibly low mm-hmm. for, you know, more than 10,000 buildings that were destroyed in some capacity. All these people who were injured, 5 people died. It just seemed very odd. And, you know, they kept mentioning that they weren't inundated with calls, that, you know, the towers were affected, cell phone service was affected. And so I was like, okay, well, is it normal? Is it policy for when y'all are inundated with calls to, you know, send it to the non-emergency line?
Mm-hmm.
And they just wanted to kind of dead the conversation.
Yeah.
They declined to further discuss mm-hmm. it.
So they're actually getting out. DeMarco Davidson and Cheryl Jackson spent more than 2 hours.
A little closer to under the two-hour mark there.
Under the two-hour mm-hmm. mark. But they're there under that collapsed church
right.
before help comes. How is it that they eventually got out, Marzanne?
So this is like the wildest part to this story. And there's a lot of wild parts to this story, right? So Reverend Dietra Weisbaker calls the county twice. They're just unhelpful, let's put it like that. And so she starts thinking through her head, like, okay, who else can I call in this moment that could make something move? And so she calls Alderwoman Shameen Clark Hubbard. Now, you have to understand that she was at the hospital visiting with her father at the time,
mm-hmm.
right? And she's getting all these calls. She is getting all these texts. And eventually, when it was safe enough to get out there, she drove, tried to get to the church, mm-hmm. got stuck on Euclid for 40 minutes, hopped out the car, left her car behind, walked the rest of the way, had somebody lift her up over a tree.
Yeah.
Right? And what she did was she called city, you know, the city police. She called the fire department. And she was like, hey, there are people. There are people in this building trapped. It has collapsed. 911 is not answering. Can y'all get somebody over there immediately? Mm-hmm. Can y'all get somebody over there to help? And they're like, cool, we're on it. But it's wild that it even had to take her to do that.
To do that. Well, and to also clarify for those maybe who were not in town or who are listening from somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
those roadways were covered with trees,
mm-hmm.
Debris.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very difficult to get anywhere. Now, one of the things that we did get a taste of was what it was like when DeMarco Davidson and Cheryl Jackson were helped by city emergency services that eventually got there. And this is what it sounded like.
The door?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes, you can cut a hole in that door.
Oh.
You can cut a hole in that door.
At the very top. Hold on.
Wait, there's glass. Marzanne, what was the fire department response like?
It was pretty much all hands on deck. There was a lot of people. There was a lot of chaos. And the way that DeMarco described it was kind of like demanding order in chaos as an organizer, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because it was such, again, a dangerous situation because so much of the building was unstable, right? And there were so many people, including their former pastor, who ended up coming up there to try to help the fire department figure out a way to get them out safely.
Mm-hmm.
They were surprised that they made it out alive.
Right.
And, you know, there was a firefighter named Bill. I do not know his last name, mm-hmm. and neither does DeMarco, but Bill was the only person that could see, had a clear, like, sight of vision of them
mm-hmm.
From where they were in all of this rubble. And they had to cut them out of, like, a door
mm-hmm.
That was on the lower level of the church to get them out safely. Like, there was really no other easy way because debris was everywhere. Bricks,
mm-hmm.
nails, wood, pieces of the roof, like,
right,
everything.
Right.
You know?
Well, and there were a lot of bricks. At what point did it become clear that Miss Patricia Pendleton was, that she had been affected in a way that there was really no way to bring her out safe and sound?
It became incredibly clear when DeMarco got out. And he looked back you know, based upon where they were standing. And it was just, it was clear that she was gone. Mm-hmm. You know, it would have been a miracle if she would have made it out. And hearing DeMarco describe that moment was utterly heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. It was heartbreaking because you do all of these things to try and save yourself, save two other people, and still in some ways he felt like it wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the sadness that is this moment, I hope that, you know, with her family, that they know that there were people inside that church that desperately tried to save her. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, tornadoes don't care right. about how fast you think you're moving. They don't care about your pleas. And unfortunately, she didn't make it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of those things where I, as a reporter, but also just as a human, I wonder if they would have answered his call, would she have had a chance? Mm-hmm. Now, who is to say? Mm-hmm. I certainly don't know, but I do wonder, and I still wonder.
And Miss Pat was at the church to do the work that she had been known for doing, right?
Mm-hmm. That is probably one of the few bright moments of this story, right? She was such a giving soul. You know, our colleague, Lucretia Wimbley, went to her service and talked and you know, heard from people that were talking about just the kind of woman she was, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And to live the life that she lived, very few can go out with their heads held up high like that. Mm-hmm. Her last moments on this earth were giving back to the community. And that is such a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. She really loved the Fountain Park neighborhood, and she loved everyone within it. And I would like to think that even though there were so many people, even before emergency services got there on the scene, that actively tried to give that love back mm-hmm. by trying to get all three of them out
yeah.
alive.
And one of those people was Clint Potts, not mm-hmm. Clint Eastwood, as he pointed yeah. out to you.
Yeah.
Tell us about Clint Potts and what he did that day that really reflects how it was necessary for community members to fill the gap that was left by a failure of civil infrastructure.
You know, it's amazing, right? This man had just gotten off of work, and like most of us, I was headed to work, but he was leaving work, right? Mm-hmm. And he was trying to beat the storm. Had to probably pull over and wait. When he finally got home, you know, he sees that his house has been damaged. One of his rental properties is gone, no longer usable. And his neighbor flags him down. And he was like, you know, he was telling me that the neighbor was like, hey, there were people that went inside of your church. The church is now collapsed. They did not come out of that church. And he was like, he didn't even have time or even thought about going to check on what his situation was, right? He was like, oh, God. And he ran over there, right? Mm-hmm. This is a longtime church member and a longtime resident of this neighborhood. And he calls out to anybody in there. He's like, can you hear me? Can you hear me? You know? And the only voice that he heard was DeMarco's. You know, unfortunately, Miss Cheryl's voice would not carry that sure. loud, right? Mm-hmm. And he was like, listen, we're going to get you out. Everything's going to be okay. Like, you know, emergency people are on the way. Like, everything's going to be fine. We got you. And they had to do it. They had to start it themselves. And I was left with that through line of, wow. The entirety of this whole tornado response has been a community effort. Truly the people. The people showed up for the community. Mm-hmm. Like when some of DeMarco's, as he called them, beloved community showed up on the scene, like one of them had brought a chainsaw, one brought a hard hat. I'm like, they were ready. They yeah. were ready. You know, they didn't know what sort of danger they'd be getting themselves into. But, you know, top of mind was there are people in here and we got to save them. Mm-hmm. And that's such a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying about DeMarco Davidson, it's having been the first time he met Cheryl Jackson, that the community was not just community that had a long-term relationship with Centennial Church, that it expanded beyond that. Now, DeMarco Davidson talked with you about what he experienced that day and encountered, you know, in the days immediately following, and it centers on connections, right? Mm-hmm. Connections between humans who love and care for one another and come together to face catastrophe.
I love my beloved community, man. I love them. And that was also some of the first people that was, you know, hugging on me when I came out the debris and everything as well. So, you know, I am blessed. I'm blessed to have such an amazing community, you know. So, again, it was a communal effort. It was absolutely a communal effort. And that's what it's going to continue to take for us to deal with all this destruction and damage. It's going to be a communal effort.
And I want to point out that he paused during that bit of conversation you had with him, mm-hmm. because this has been an extremely emotional experience overall. And what he experienced that day does not stay on the calendar on May 16th. It carries through. But DeMarco also talked with you about disconnection between humans and systems that have long existed before the May 16th tornado.
I can't help but to say that I literally thought when 911 did not work the second time, I literally thought, oh, this is why people in St. Louis City still don't feel safe, even with a lower crime rate. I literally thought that. That thought literally came to my mind in the midst of all everything. Because if we cannot have access to emergency services in an actual emergency, this qualifies as an emergency. We just got hit and we are stuck in debris. This is an emergency. That was the first thought. The second thought, I kid you not, was how many people was this the last thing they heard? That hang up and call 911 after you called 911. How many people was this the last thing they heard? How many times was this the last thing that gave that was somebody who had some type of hope and it's just completely eliminated and wiped away? Like, that's what, like, it infuriated me and almost made me lose my composure.
What went through your mind as you were listening to DeMarco share this with you, Merritt Mersan?
I've heard this clip, like, multiple times, you know, but it is amazing how a known issue like this, right, and that was the first thing that came to my mind when I learned about the magnitude of this story, mm-hmm. was that 2023 report from Ford through Ferguson. And I said, wow, we already know about this, though. Mm-hmm. Like, we've talked about this. We have talked about this a lot. And things have not changed in the city or the county. We've talked about this. They offered recommendations. They talked about why a fragmented system is a problem. Mm-hmm. And the fact that in an actual emergency of this magnitude transpired, and the report is still here, mm-hmm. and still very relevant. And when he said, how many people was the non-emergency line instead of regular 911 or another way aside from a real-life person, right, the last thing that they heard? That really messed me up a little bit, because it was like, wow, he had hope in his situation. He was like, my phone works. I still got my phone. Mm-hmm. He had that hope, and he heard that, and that hope was snatched from him.
Yeah.
That could have been his only chance. His phone could have died after that, for
right.
all we know.
Mm-hmm. And to clarify, that Transform 911 report out of Fort Worth mm-hmm. to Ferguson in 2023, it did focus on St. Louis County.
Mm-hmm.
But the fragmentation, that is something that was addressed by Reverend Dietra Wise Baker in a very clear and pointed way.
I think people in the community know, you know, the longstanding fight and divide between St. Louis City and St. Louis County. You're aware of, you know, the conversations that we've had, crucial and critical conversations that we've had in our community about the need for St. Louis City and St. Louis County to be on the same page, for us not to have redundant services, how to be efficient. The fact that I called twice and spoke to a live person that told me, this is St. Louis County 911. I have to transfer you to the city in an emergency is absolutely sinful.
And that was Reverend Dietra Wise Baker. What are the biggest questions that remain for you about this story, Mercer Ann?
Well, the biggest one is accountability. Like, what are you guys going to do? Like, natural disasters are not going to go away. It was a tornado this time. It could be a flood next time, you know? It could be another really bad snowstorm or ice storm. What are you all going to do when an emergency erupts and someone calls 911?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is the equipment still good? Like, is it reliable? Does it need an upgrade? How many people are manning the phones during this time? Were there not enough people on staff that day? The other thing is, what is the protocol? What is the protocol for when you all are inundated with calls, right? It may not be a natural disaster this time. It could be something far worse. And we've unfortunately seen far worse in this region. School shootings, for example, you know, what will you do then? Is there something in place? And I do wonder when this whole fragmented issue with the city and the county together will be addressed, you know, like, we hop between the city and county all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When will you all come together so that when an emergency like this affects us all, we'll all be okay and we won't have to rely on elected officials to get us help?
Right. To those personal connections that we have or very well may not have. So the human impact with all of this, you know, the community impact, what is it that is next for the Fountain Park community and the church specifically? Are they still gathering to worship?
They are still gathering. They really don't want to kind of talk about where they're gathering. You know, they want that worship space to be respected, and I totally understand that. You know, what's next for them is a rebuild. Rebuild takes time and takes money, you know, and those things take time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they announced a plan to rebuild the church in the Fountain Park neighborhood. The church will not be necessarily like on the same, you know, space
sure.
as the church was because the foundation is just no longer safe to do that. But it will incorporate the community as well. You know, they wanted to incorporate some affordable housing, gathering / worship space, more green space, a commercial space. Like, they want to rebuild this community and continue to serve the community that they've served for, you know, 121 years. Like, they want to keep that dream and that vision and that reality and that purpose going. And they've continued to do that. Like, if you go out to Fountain Park right now, you will see people out there working, you know, whether it is cleaning up in some capacity, handing out food, just regular, you know, one-on-one fellowship to mourn, to, you know, just have it out, whatever it needs to be. Like, there are still people out there, right? And it is, again, the beauty that is in the moment of these tragedies is that the people of St. Louis and St. Louis County, because I know people drove to support the city, they continue to show up. You know, when the services that we pay for are not showing up the way that we had hoped they would, the community has. And that is the most beautiful thing to see in all of this, from rescue efforts to try and get, you know, Cheryl and DeMarco and Miss Pat out, to, you know, cleaning up these communities, to making sure they have food, making sure they have clothes, trying to figure out ways for them to have shelter, you know, in the meantime. That is all community. That is all community. And that is honestly the thread of all of these stories that we have been working on. Mm-hmm. It is that community showed up when others failed to do so.
Right. Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson is STLPR's afternoon newscaster. Her feature for St. Louis Public Radio, published today, is titled Victims Trapped Inside a Collapsed St. Louis Church Say 911 Calls Went to a Non-Emergency Line. Marissa Ann, thank you so much for talking with us about your piece today.
Thanks for having me.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
And I, Elaine Cha.
With audio engineering by Alex Hoyer.
Podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.